Boston again. I've seen the group grow from year to year, and it's always a pleasure to come back and address the seniors here. Hopefully, the message we give you today can be a little helpful. I love the topic, living the second half. You know, there's an old saying that the first 50 years of our life we collect, and the second 50 years of our life we have to give away. So I'm on that second 50 years. So my husband's packing up the boxes as we speak. We just finished a kitchen remodel. So needless to say, it's amazing how many can openers you can accumulate in 30 years of marriage. And what better use is to send it on to some a younger couple or someone trying to establish a kitchen. But that's always fun. And I know you all are facing those same issues. I like to simplify things. The more clutter we have around us, the more confusing things get. I go into that topic, but we'll save that topic for another day. Today we're going to talk about estate planning. Now, jokingly, we think the older we get, we need to do our estate planning. Well, seriously, the older we get, the time is way past for us to have done estate planning. I see a fellow lawyer in the audience, and I know Calvin can testify to this, but when we become 19 years old in the state of Alabama, we become adults. Prior to 19, our parents made our decisions for us. And younger than 19, even at 18 and 16 and some younger ages, we have certain rights that we have. But at 19, we have a full catalog of adult rights in Alabama. So it goes without saying that at 19 is the first time we should establish our own estate planning documents. Because at 19, we could have a car, we could have a bank account, we could have inherited part of our grandparents' estate. So at 19, we have those decisions we will have to put in place. So that one, if we pass away, our wishes are followed. And more importantly, if we become incapable of acting on our own and making our own decisions, what are the lifetime documents that we have in place that we can call back on to delegate those decisions without having to go to court? Every time I go down to court, the judge says, Lynn, are you doing okay? I never see you around here. I said, yes, great. My planning's answered because I want to stay out of the courtroom as much as I can. I don't have fun, my clients don't have fun, and it costs money that we can avoid having to spend by doing planning ahead of time. Now, in estate planning, we have a couple of documents, and I'm going to confess a little bit. My situation is I was born too early. Has anybody ever had this little issue about dealing with computers and electronics and certain things? Well, I am as nervous as a cat having this electronic in my back pocket. I'm nervous as a cat dealing with this computer because why? I was born too early. When we interview new workers for the office, the first thing I ask was, what year were you born? If it's anything after 1980, I know they have a grasp of the computer. I spent 15 minutes on the phone with the website today to ask them, where is your log on button for the website? Well, the lady says, do you see it in the top right of your screen? Absolutely not. She says, well, you've probably blown up the screen to see it better. I said, you're right. So I shrunk it down a little bit. There it was. But, so I was born too early. So if anybody ever asked you, Joel, what's going on? In other words, you're at the grocery market, you're trying to write a check, you have a credit card, and folks behind you are just pushing you on. You say, excuse me, I was born too early. Now, by the time they figure out what that means, you've finished up your business, put the checkbook, put the credit card back in your wallet so that you don't get to the car and go, oh my goodness, did I leave the credit card at the home? So please, borrow that statement, I was born too early. It doesn't say you're old. We were just born too early. Okay. On our estate planning packages, we call it, the different items that we need to make sure we have in place, what would those be? Well, the last will and testament, that's when you die, and how are your assets distributed? I tell my clients that's the one document I am least worried about. I am more worried about what's going on in your life right now and while you're living. mean, they make sure your finances are taken care of, your health care, all of your lifetime decisions. And that will lend to the necessity of the next set of documents, meaning the durable power of attorney for financial affairs, as well as the durable power of attorney for health care. And then we also have the living will, which addresses your end of life wishes. And not to forget those very important and very confusing beneficiary designation forms. When I ask clients about those forms, the deer in the headlights look comes across the table. What do you mean? My will leaves it all to my children or to my spouse. Why do I need a beneficiary designation? We're going to address that issue at the end of this talk. And of course, later on, as you have other estate planning needs and other estate planning considerations that have to be addressed, whether or not you need a trust, whether or not you have to do tax planning, whether or not you have any disabled beneficiaries or a disabled spouse who might be in a nursing home where we are trying to protect their Medicaid eligibility. So that's the basic documents that we would see in an estate plan. Now let's talk about the last will and testament. And you understand, that's the one document I'm least worried about. When the personal representative in the will who's been appointed by you comes to see me, I have usually had to call and I've been to the hospital and I have spent the last year or so dealing with the sickness. So I'm generally well aware of my clients and how they've met their final creator. But usually in the last will and testament, I know you're in a better place by the time the family comes in without me. I know we're in the finest place that we could ever, ever imagine and that we prayed for and prepared for all of our lives. So at least you're in a good place at that point. Now, for a will, you have to be age 18 to sign a will. It's kind of interesting because the will, to be witnessed, the witnesses have to be adults. So the witnesses have to be 19, but you can be 18. And I really think that has something to be said about going to war, being able to fight for your country at age 18. You want to make sure you have the ability to sign a will and be able to dispose of your assets. Now legally, you really couldn't have sold them during your life. You could have written a will, but it's just an interesting age difference. 18 to do a will, 19 to witness it. A will has to be a written document. It can't be verbal and it can't be handwritten. In some states, they will honor a handwritten will. Now, a handwritten item will have a very persuasive effect, but I would not want to depend on handwriting that you've had notarized, because a will requires at least two witnesses. I've had handwritings or written documents that clients will come in and show me, and it has been notarized. Well, there's no other witnesses. So I only have one witness, who was the notary. So if it's a typewritten document, notarized, it's not a valid will. Of course, the will has to have the two witnesses and a notary to be self-proving. And Calvin's shaking his head. Because you know why it doesn't, what has to happen when you don't have that magic language. And the magic language is, the testator or testatrix has signed in the presence of the witnesses, two witnesses in the presence of each other, and before a notary. And we recite very specific information. It can't be signed and then witnessed later. It could, but it's not self-proving. Well, what's so special about self-proving? Self-proving saves us court costs. A self-proving will, we can take that will, we take waivers of the next of kin, we take the waiver with the petition downtown, and at the window we are issued letters testamentary and the will is probated, and the probate of the estate administration begins that day when presented. That's why it's so important to have a self-proving will. If you don't have a self-proving will, we have to bring testimony, we generally have to have a hearing, we have to go find the witnesses. If it was a will signed 30 years ago, I was still around, but some of my clients, witnesses, may not still be around. First will I have a probate? Unfortunately, it was not a will I had done. It was a will signed by two witnesses. I had no idea, so let me find out how to start. So what I did is I opened phone book. I found the witness, and surprisingly, the witness, I called the witness. It was the same address, same phone number. She knew this gentleman was sad to hear he had passed away. And I said, oh, by chance, do you know the other witness? Oh, yes, she's my neighbor. So how lucky could somebody get finding the two witnesses who are willing to go downtown and sign the statement to prove the will? So you've got to make sure you have the self-proving language. Sometimes I'll tell my clients when they come in and they bring their documents, I've got a famous saying, if it's not broken, I don't fix it. I borrowed that from somebody. But if it's not broken, I don't fix it. If it requires a rewrite or more time to rewrite certain documents, we'll juggle whether it's worthwhile, whether we really need to spend the money to save the money down the road. So we're juggling economics. Now, next slide, and forgive me again, I'm going too early, I'll keep telling you that again. Next, see, I've already gone through the next slide and I skipped it already, so I hope y'all are keeping up with me. All right, so why do we need a last will and testament? Well, imagine you passed away and did not have a will. When you leave off and don't do your planning, the law does it for you. And that's called an intestate distribution. If you've not written a will, the law will distribute your assets for you, and we'll talk about how that happens in a minute. You want a will to where you have, make your wishes known. You want to be able to waive certain requirements. Well, what's the requirements would that be? A bond. If you don't waive bond, you've got to spend money post the bond to administer the estate. And a bond could cost a couple of thousand dollars depending on the size of the estate. You may not be bondable. Sometimes I get folks who had too many traffic tickets. And the bond company did not want to bond them because they thought they were a big risk. Well, somebody who's careless on the road and can't drive safely, how can they be careful with money? So a bond is to protect what the personal representative may do and protect those potential beneficiaries from the personal representative abusing, losing, miscalculating the estate assets. Another item you may want to also waive is inventory and accounting and potentially a final settlement. But no matter what the will waives, that personal representative, who's also called your executor, has responsibilities to the beneficiaries. Even though you don't need to do a formal inventory and file it in court, even though you don't have to do formal appraisals and accountings in court, you best believe you better be reporting to the beneficiaries, because communication is the best way to handle an administration. When we start beginning the state, we have the administrator, we have the personal representative, we add up all the assets, we tell the beneficiaries what's there, what are we likely to be doing with the will, where are we going, how long it's going to take. If we have special gifts in the will, like the house goes to the oldest grandchild, that will be made known. If we don't have special items, and perhaps we have the family house, I make sure that if any beneficiary wants to buy that house, they better speak now or forever hold the peace, because how do you take one house and divide it among five or so beneficiaries? Another item, reason why you want to do a last will and testament is protect your privacy. You don't have to file all of these items in inventory in court if you waive the inventory. If you waive the inventory and none of the beneficiaries object, you could literally probate an estate with a petition that says, here's the will, here's the petition for letters testamentary, the personal representative has issued those letters, personal representative gathers the assets, pays the bills, and then distributes to the beneficiaries. If everyone is in agreement, they can sign a consent, and there's never one document in court that ever is reflecting what bank accounts you have and what your net worth is. Now, if there is a minor beneficiary, a child, you've got to do an accounting, because a minor cannot waive notice and they cannot consent without going to court with a full accounting. What we put in our wills, Calvin's shaking his head, any other attorney shaking their head here also in agreement? And clients who have had this done. If there are any minor beneficiaries or beneficiaries who no longer have mental capacity, you want to make the trustee. But then the beneficiary doesn't have to consent, but the trustee can. And that way you stay out of court. One main item of making sure you have a will is to prevent the intestate succession. Now, the next you go to the next slide, this is the most fun to me. It's the math. But I'll go through. This is how the state will be distributed. If we had $300,000 and there was no will, and the deceased passed away with this amount. If the deceased on the first line had no children and had parents, and each of the parents would split the estate. So $300,000 would be $150,000. Now, if the deceased had two children, and living parents. Then the children split the parents. Now, in a state planning situation where you're trying to move the estate value to them to the generation, you don't want to have happened that far. Because now the estate is up to $540,000. It's big before you end up having an estate in the state tax. But years ago, our living parents was about $600,000. Years ago, when I was a paralegal, no way. I remember that it was $100,000. It was huge. So you can end up passing away with a house, maybe more life insurance policy, and you end up having an estate. In today's world, if that person did not have an estate, did not know who it is, the parents could have had issues with their estate tax, could have given the assets to the child, or the child to the children of their own assets, and now the parents are going to receive the asset back. I had the same situation occur in a situation on a Medicaid case. Husband and wife gave the child all of their lands and reserved by the state. They did this 20 years ago. The child died. No will. Where did the parents' property, where did the property end up? Back to the parents. To the child they know that. Guess what? I was a nursing home. Not we soiled. But we did some very creative planning. Because in certain rules, a husband can give his wife a gift. And that's what we did. The husband gave his wife a gift. The wife did a new deal with the trust for the husband to protect it from being counted again. And the wife passed away and it was counted again for Medicaid purposes. And very sadly, life was passed away about 2 months ago. So Medicaid's just getting more done. If you use the rule well first, and you use the rule to protect, yes. And there were other relatives who would end up in Medicaid. But the trust was there to protect the Medicaid spouse. Now, in this next case, we've got a situation where we're married, and we have our parents. In a marriage situation, the spouse gets the first $100,000 and then gets the rest. So here, the spouse gets the first $100,000, gets $200,000 left, gets $100,000, and then each parent splits $50,000. I wonder if my husband did not have a will. I wonder if he really meant to leave his parents half of his pay after I got the $100,000. I don't think so. But earlier in marriage, we had those long before I was in law school, too. Now, we have a situation where we have no children and no parents, and the spouse and parents also. The next situation, we have two children, a surviving spouse. Now, when all the children are also the children of the deceased, in other words, mom and dad are all the children, one marriage and one set of children, not no stepchildren, then the spouse can get the first 50,000 of the estate. and that we have put the fiduciaries in position.
want baby smile bills, and we won't tell it. But if you don't want to file baby smile bills, we're going to file all the permanent household furniture. Sometimes we have very valuable household furniture, and sometimes not. But we're always looking at the economics of having two permanent residences. The responsibility of the criminal personal representative in the estate is to collect and protect the assets. We make sure our debts and our taxes are paid. We want to take control of them and make sure insurance is continued on plans and houses. And then ultimately, we distribute. Now, all of those assets are co-owned, and we're looking at it. I'll get them to tell Kent the same as well. There's no part of his pay for the furniture. We don't want Freddie as a creditor, so if the bill at the power of the hospital was paid, I would never inherit his money, and that's where it is. Because that's what we would end up doing anyway to the estate. Now, if everybody's talking on it, I would rather let the beneficiary come to some conclusion. Because I don't want that to diminish